You are a biological unit. You are imperfect.
This is the Imperfect Mormon Wellness Project. I'm your host, Wendy Perry.
Do you find yourself constantly comparing yourself to others in your in-group? Do you find comfort in recognizing your superiority over people in out-groups? Do you ever worry about what others might think of your clothes, your hair, your car, your house, or your children's performance? Do you ever feel that you are not as worthy or lovable as others? If you have any of these symptoms, then you may be suffering from persistent perfectionitis. If you are a sufferer, stop. There is help. Talk to your doctor about Zanublijam. Zanublijam, taken as directed, may help reduce or even eliminate some or all of your symptoms. Side effects may include a constant itching and burning sensation around the ears, purple streaks in your urine, panic attacks upon seeing the purple urine, loud ringing in your ears, and a desire to clap loudly every time you see a red car. Please take caution while driving. In fact, do not drive or operate machinery at all while taking Zanublijam. For other side effects, visit our website at www.endingtheshameofpersistentperfectionitis.com. And don't forget to tell your doctor what they should prescribe, because pharmaceutical companies always know more than your doctor. If you have trouble paying for your medication, please talk to us. We won't actually help pay for your medication, but it sure makes us seem like a nice bunch of folks to say that now, doesn't it? And remember, the only difference between elimination and illumination is you. Plus an extra L and an I instead of an E, but who's counting? Now back to your program, brought to you by Zanublijam, the answer for those who know that no matter what you do, it's never ever going to be good enough.
I'm practically perfect in every way. Practically perfect, so people say. Each vote who virtually knows no bound. Each truth is great and patently sound. I'm practically perfect from head to toe. If I had a fault, it would never dare to show. I'm so practically
perfect. Practically perfect in every way? Is that your standard? Do you take joy in an imperfect job done pretty darn well? Perfectionism as a term is used in so many ways it can get confusing. If I said you are a perfectionist, would you take it as an insult or a compliment? As in, you are a person who tries to do things well. I've got some interviews coming up with a recovering perfectionistic Mormon mom and a little audio from our favorite Bill Reel. Before I do that, I'm going to define terms and talk about what perfectionism is and isn't. Then you will all be experts and can sort out when my guests are talking about healthy striving or harmful perfectionism. The first thing perfectionism isn't is trying to do your best. It's not setting your sights on excellence and achieving goals. And it's not grit or determination. Please take heaping helpings of all these things. I think when we keep becoming perfect in these bounds, we are on the right track to self-worth and happy living. Perfectionism isn't something you have or don't have in most cases. Most of us have a little or a lot of perfectionistic tendencies in different areas of our lives. I like to do the laundry really well. My husband is a bit obsessive about emails. Although perfectionism's not OCD, it can be linked to it or be a precursor to it, or obsessive compulsive behaviors, or even the disorder itself. So if perfectionism is not in that list, then what is it? Why is it harmful? And how do I know when I'm engaging with it and drifting over to the unhealthy version of doing my best? Perfectionism at its heart is a misguided effort to avoid painful emotions by receiving approval and acceptance from others. It can be a maladaptive strategy to undo damage from trauma, abuse, or unhealthy wiring from one's past. It's rigidly basing self-worth on our accomplishments and our productivity. And it's other-focused. What will others think of me? And herein lies the catch, the crux of why trying to be perfect never works. Because perfectionism is about perception. We want to be seen and thought of as perfect, but we have no control over others' perceptions. Is everyone going to love your new hairstyle or approve of all of your choices? What audience are you applying to anyway? Perfectionism is the enemy of excellence because the thinking becomes black and white. There is no joy in a hard-fought 4B+. It's perfect or it's a fail. Perfectionism will stymie and stall you at every turn. Perfectionism is the partner of procrastination and lives in opposition to creativity and joy. Research shows that perfectionism actually hampers success. In fact, it's often the path to high stress, depression, anxiety, and addiction. It has been linked to eating disorders and suicide risk. And perhaps it's no surprise then that relationships suffer
all
as well.
Perfectionism is the 20-ton shield that we carry around hoping that it'll keep us from being hurt. When in truth, what it does is it keeps us from being seen.
Here's an easy 3-question survey test to diagnose perfectionism. Number 1, am I excited and motivated by my goals or intimidated and stressed out by them? Number 2, when I think about results, am I only or mostly concerned with how I will look to others? Number 3, am I doing things a certain way in order to gain approval and appear perfect to others? Or can I take pride and joy in my efforts and growth? Here's part of my interview with that recovering perfectionistic Mormon mom. I think you're going to like her a lot.
You know, in doing anything, how would you do it perfectly to please everyone?
You can't. I've been listening to a lot of life coaches on some podcasts lately, and they've been talking a lot about our thoughts and how we can't control how other people's thoughts or how somebody perceives you or accepts your service or your action toward them. And so all you can do is control your own thoughts. So for instance, I had an instance with a friend of mine. We were really good friends about 6 years ago when I first moved to this new area, and we became good friends because we had one friend in common. And so that friend moved away and we continued kind of being friends, and our daughters were really good friends. And then over the last couple of years, she has pulled back from me and hasn't allowed me to be her friend. And then I texted back and said, well, can we talk? And she didn't want to talk. And so I had to kind of come to a point where I realized that she may not want to be my friend, and she may have a different picture of me than I mean to give. And you have to be able to accept that somebody's going to think wrongly of you, and you have to be okay with that, because I can't change her mind and I can't change her thoughts. And I am okay with her having a perception of me that may not be accurate, because I can't change that.
No. Wow.
And I think that it goes to like drawing boundaries. Sometimes you have to draw a boundary to protect yourself and others, and or you may have to say no because you're not comfortable or don't want to do what is being asked of you. And you have to be okay that somebody else is going to perceive that as a maybe a negative or a bad thing about you, even though you're just protecting yourself. You know, emotionally, I can't handle her in my life. I can't keep handling that rejection. So I have to draw a boundary somewhere. And I have to be okay that she's not going to be my friend.
So there's someone in this world that doesn't think you're perfect?
Right. And I think that's kind of helped
me
with my perfectionism. That I like the term. I had a friend tell me that she uses the term a recovering perfectionist. I feel like I'm constantly a recovering perfectionist, because every day I try to be perfect, and I know I can't ever be perfect. I have often heard of the idea that this life, when I was growing up, it was always described as a test, that we're in a life as a test. And more recently, I hear that they don't say that anymore. They say life is a classroom.
Oh, wow.
And that we, by our own agency and thoughts and actions, sign up for the classes that we're going to take on this earth. And my choices are going to lead me to different classes, and my life won't look like someone else's life, and I'm okay with that.
What are some other things that you see or think maybe women have perfectionistic beliefs about that are particularly Mormon? Anything?
I think we have the idea that we need to be perfect mothers.
If you want this choice position, have a cheery disposition, rosy cheeks, no warts. That's the part I put in. Play games, all sorts. You must be kind, you must be witty, very sweet and fairly pretty.
Of all the ridiculous ideas.
And that we need to get all of our children to church every Sunday, that we need to get them all through the youth program, that we need to get them to the temple, we need to get them into good schools so they can get an education. I think there's a lot of pressure for us to raise these perfect kids that are going to then continue having perfect families and then continue having perfect kids, you know?
Right.
Which we know is not attainable.
Scold and dominate us. We will never give you cause to hate.
I also think social media has been kind of a big deal with a lot of my friends that are members of the church. I have a couple friends that I've talked to about social media that are not members of Art Faith, and they don't have the same perception or the same problems with social media that I feel like many of my friends that are members of the church and I have talked about.
I'm clueless. I have no idea what perfectionism in social media is. I have a lot of people that like some of the stuff on Pinterest that I put. That's all I know.
Well, it just goes to like Facebook is the big one. Instagram is the other big one. And there's a lot of people out there that they just post the good things, right? They just post the times that they're happy.
Oh, okay.
And so as a woman, I'm looking at this and I'm like, oh, look, they took their kids to this. Oh, look, their kids are all smiling in that picture while they're eating their ice cream. And none of the ice cream is on their clothes. And they look like they had the best time at the zoo. And why am I not at the zoo with my kids? And why are my kids not enjoying ice cream like their kids enjoy ice cream? And you start comparing.
Outings give us treats. Sing songs, bring sweets.
Have you decided you are a perfectionist or have some areas you want to work on? Great. Perfectionists love to work on things. The problem with the cure is you may not like it. No, not one little bit. It's very, very difficult for people to implement. It takes a lot of practice and determination to be a happier, less annoying person. Perfectionists in therapy will fight you at every turn given the cure to perfectionism. What is this cure, you ask? It sounds horrible, awful, and terrible. Maybe I should just take some of that Zenubla jam stuff. Well, take a deep breath, and when you're ready, I'll tell you the secret to curing perfectionism. Well, at least it's part of it. Are you ready? Okay, here it is. It's self-compassion. I know, I told you you wouldn't like it. Now, that's the perfectionist out there. You know, your spouses and friends are saying, yes, Wendy, please tell us more. The reason perfectionists will clam up at this point is that they will relate self-compassion to weakness and probably other things like poor performance and even failure. But the evidence clearly goes against that. In fact, self-compassionate people are actually higher performers and more conscientious than those who don't practice self-compassion. Have I got you listening now, all you perfectionists? Research shows that self-compassion is linked to the following highly positive traits: reflective wisdom, self-awareness, insight, optimism, and overall happiness. But don't be fooled. Self-compassionate people aren't Pollyannas who see the world through a rainbow prism. It's quite the opposite. They are actually better at seeing life as it really is, but are able to deal with negative emotions and process them, rather than denying things or blaming others. To quote a recent article from the National Geographic magazine, the soft qualities of self-compassion are like the tough qualities of grit. Both allow us to accept setbacks, to deal with them, and move on. Okay, you're doing good now. You're taking this in, which you may be wondering, well, what about big egos and that narcissistic version of self-esteem that seems to be everywhere these days? Doesn't self-compassion lead to that? Thankfully, psychologists are moving more and more away from seeing high and inflated self-esteem as beneficial. And seeking after self-esteem can lead to narcissism, self-absorption, self-righteous anger, and even prejudice and discrimination. But I'm happy to report, as it turns out, self-compassion isn't related to inflated egos or self-absorption either. Self-compassion researcher Kristen Neff says that self-compassion is the perfect alternative to the relentless pursuit of self-esteem, because it offers the same protection against harsh self-criticism as self-esteem, but without the need to see ourselves as perfect or as better than others. In other words, self-compassion provides the same benefits as high self-esteem without its drawbacks. And rather than being egotistical, self-compassionate people are better able to accept criticism and even deal with humiliation better than others, and are much more able to be compassionate. That sounds like some things that Mormons ought to be interested in, or in my opinion, should be interested in acquiring. I'm going to read a quote from Kristen Neff's book, Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. Oh, I'm not stealing from her book. I'm promoting it. So go buy this book. I highly recommend it. She says, most of us are incredibly hard on ourselves when we finally admit some flaw or shortcoming. I'm not good enough. I'm worthless. It's not surprising that we hide the truth from ourselves when honesty is met with such harsh condemnation. When comparing our weight to those of magazine models, for instance, or our bank accounts to those of the rich and successful, we cause ourselves incredible amounts of pain. We lose faith in ourselves. Even if we do manage to get our act together, the goalposts for what counts as good enough seem always to remain frustratingly out of reach. We must be smart and fit and fashionable and successful and sexy and, oh, spiritual too. And no matter how well we do, someone else always seems to be doing it better. I sound like Monson there, for some reason. The result of this line of thinking is sobering. Insecurity, anxiety, and depression are incredibly common in our society, and much of this is due to self-judgment, to beating ourselves up when we feel we aren't winning in the game of life. The answer, she says, is to stop judging and evaluating ourselves altogether, to stop trying to label ourselves as good or bad, and simply accept ourselves with an open heart, to treat ourselves with the same kindness, caring, and compassion we would show to a good friend, or even a stranger for that matter. Sadly, however, there's almost no one whom we treat as badly as ourselves. I have to make a confession here. When I first saw her book, Self-Compassion, I did kind of think, oh, that sounds like some kind of new age, oh, I don't know, soft stuff that I wouldn't be interested in. But as I got into it, I realized the thing I really care about is results and what the research shows. And at this point, I'm convinced.
That would seem logical.
This has been the Mormon Wellness Project. Our intro to perfectionism. Next time we take a much deeper dive into the Mormon culture and perfectionism and a lot more. So see you next time. Until then, happy trails. And let's have Mary Poppins take us on out.
I'm practically perfect, and here's my aim. By the time I leave here, you both will be the same. You'll be practically perfect.
Venue for the jam.